Well, you see Joe Biden's speech and the fight for the filibuster and the voting reform. What do you think the media's saying about all of that? I have a whole lot of headlines to share with you there. Professor Larry Bell joins the program today. We'll get us started. And then the escalating crime in our country. We're seeing the recent shootings in New York again and all over our nation. It's no laughing matter what's happening there. We'll take a look and dissect that with the National Police Association, Sergeant Betsy Smith. And then Dr. Peter Bregan's here. China being a global predator and some of the recent viruses and problems we're seeing in China. We'll take a deep dive into that, as well as the Wuhan lab and the funding. What do you hear some of the things there? And then former CIA Del Wilbur on the, well, possible invasion of Ukraine? Or is Putin just having fun with the West at this point? That is the story and the question of the moment, isn't it? All that's coming up next on Viewpoint this Sunday.
Time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to the weekend news magazine, Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Aloud here. Well, we'll start right at the top here and talk about the Biden speech, the filibuster, the voting deal they're trying to push through there, and all of that. Let's do that right now with Professor Larry Bell is here. He's an endowed professor at the University of Houston. He's a political analyst and author of a new book, Beyond Flag Poles and Footprints, Pioneering the Space Frontier. And that is co-authored with Buzz Aldrin and Professor Larry Bell. So that is a must get. And we'll have that in the bookstore for you and on the front page there of the network. Check that out. This press conference, it's a good place to start here on the program. So let me just read you all some of the headlines. Real simply, this will give you a good perspective at 30,000 feet, what people are thinking. And it is interesting when you see the headlines like this compared to another president who you know what the headlines would be like. But we'll ask Professor Bell that in a moment. So NBC News says, White House on defense after Biden press conference. Okay. ABC News says top highlights from President Biden's press conference to mark first year in office. The New York Times says in press conference, Biden defends his first year in office. CBS News, well, Biden takes defiant tone in press conference marking first year. Now, as we change it a little bit there, the Washington Times says behind the scenes at Biden's bizarre press conference, you start to see just a little change. Fox News, Biden's press conference gets panned by critics, total disaster. And lastly, can't leave out MSNBC Chuck Todd, right? President Biden's press conference gives better understanding of what he's thinking. You know, Larry, I got to tell you, I just chuckled and seen all the headlines. And what do you think those headlines would have been if they were reporting on the Trump 2-hour press conference? How do you think they would read?
It's really interesting to watch where some of the acolytes are standing on this thing. And I particularly like the last one you offered that said, what is he thinking? And I don't think many people give him credit for thinking at all. I think there's a sense that he's being completely controlled. So So basically the press conference was, as always, talking points and delivery points. And can he stand up for 2 hours and so on and make make cogent responses to things? What's particularly important and interesting to me, of course, is not his performance, but really what the programming statements are behind them and what his script notes say and basically how they deflect and also who they call upon, who asks the questions and the responses and so on. So the fact that he's being panned by some of his former loyalists is finally interesting. I see it as rats from the sinking ship phenomena. At least I like to think that's the case. Yeah. I watched Peggy Noonan, who's no fan of of Trump and her critique of it and so on. So I don't think there was any great news here other than he was able to stand up for 2 hours. He actually took some questions and made some responses. Mm-hmm. It was a little painful to sit through the whole thing.
Well, let me ask you now, did you sit through the whole thing? Did you watch it?
No, I didn't. I didn't have that intestinal fortitude to be able to do that.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this now. What is the best word that comes to your mind to describe this entire press conference? How would you sum it up?
Staged, of course, and would be the one that comes to mind. And and it's interesting as much what he said as the questions that weren't asked, of course. And I think most people realize that. He didn't really expect anyone to ask about Afghanistan because that was is clearly a fiasco. The border was never mentioned. Angst and concern and a very legitimate concern that we have a tyrannical group of Marxists that are trying to take control and presumably the floodgates have held back thanks to Manchin and Sinema, but they're not going to quit.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the Marxists never do quit, and that is an accurate point there. Let me jump into that filibuster now with you. Now, to be clear here with everybody, the Republicans, as you know, the Senate Republicans blocked the Democrats from moving forward on that voting rights legislation because they failed to get the 50 votes to change the rules to move forward with the legislation. Now, Chuck Schumer, the majority leader there now, then brought up the vote on the rules change to try to move that legislation forward with this like one-time exemption to break the rules again, you know. And of course, as Professor Bell was just talking about, that was fiercely opposed by, surely the Republicans, but also Joe Manchin and Kirsten Sinema, which have been the firewall, I continue to call them, after those two Senate seats were lost in Georgia. It really came down to a full Marxist takeover or Manchin and Sinema becoming, I will say this to you, almost national heroes in some ways in regard. Now, the whole concept of this now, to just real simple here, is it their aggressiveness with the midterms coming quickly and trying to get the voting rights became the major push when they couldn't get the Build Back Better through. Is this to make the controversy behind the 2020 election, one of the most controversial elections or the most controversial, certainly in our lifetimes, is it to make all of those rules permanent? Is that the idea of the voting rights bill?
There's an interesting article in the Wall Street Journal this morning that I noticed. It talked about, you know, we can be grateful that Manchin and Sinema held back the filibuster drive and so on. But what they were saying, what one of the editors was saying, was that this is the new paradigm, you know, that the Democrats are, the attack on voting rights and filibuster and so on is their new platform. It's been institutionalized. And then we see in the background, we see, of course, Schumer running for his life. He's afraid of being primaried by AOC. And we see Pelosi's pretty much out of the picture now because she's going to move to Florida and get away from all the chaos that she's created in California. So I think we're seeing a new Democratic platform emerging here. And it can, of course, backfire as well. I think we're all looking forward to the midterms and seeing quite a sea change. I think one of the key elements of the midterms, and maybe getting a little bit away from our conversation here, is that when the conservatives take the Congress, all of these investigatory chairmanships are going to change. And I think we're going to see the floodgates open in terms of investigations of so many issues, the attacks on Trump with Russia collusion, and we're going to see the more about Hunter's laptop. We're going to see, the Democrats now, they have no bench whatsoever, and they're even looking, you know, to Hillary Clinton. And that's going to be emerging at a time when the Durham reports presumably will be coming out and so on. So there's it's going to be an interesting year for sure.
We'll see. We'll see. You know, I thank goodness I didn't hold my breath on the last round of Durham reports, or I'd have been passed out for sure. So I don't know. I don't have a lot of, strong feelings about that. That is long overdue. Here's the thing. You just voted a real sense of strength and optimism, as many Republicans are doing right now, when you said, well, when, you know, they take back the House. Now, is there a big risk here of the Republicans overplaying their hand right now with this whole, I'm seeing it everywhere. It seems like they've already won the election in 2022. Of course, haven't had a vote yet, but it seems like they've already won it. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm optimistic that it's going to happen. I think that, I think the floodgates are going to open. I think that, you know, of course, we take great heart in what happened in, Virginia in terms of Youngkin's election and the actions that he's taken right away. It was quite interesting the first day that he took office. He eliminated the mask mandate for children. And another thing I think is happening is with all of the mandates and the draconian mandates and so on with the COVID, mm-hmm. which is supposed to have been a big Democrat platform. I think Omicron, and you and I have discussed this briefly, is basically going to take away their mandate. Mm-hmm. And people are upset because of, you know, the failure to produce therapeutics and dropping the ball on being able to get tested and so on.
Yeah. So let's take a few moments now, Professor Bell, and talk. I want to talk to you about China. You know, we have Dr. Peter Bregan, who wrote the bestseller there on China, coming up in the program today. And I want to touch with you on that because you have a really, really great article on the op-ed on the platform on America Out Loud, the China virus game of fund and cover up, to the point here. And so let's connect a few dots here to give people a preview of what we're looking at here. On January 11th, there were these unredacted emails from a small group of top scientists, spearheaded by Fauci, of course, that were released. And it appears that they were, from the redactions and all, that they were solely to shield Fauci and the NIH from scrutiny over its cover-up on the virus origins. Can you connect a few dots there for us on what that's about, what happened?
So now we learn that this white paper that was developed, that was put in the Lancet, that they were able to leverage. Here you have this powerful organization, you know, the NIAID, coming out with this disclaimer. And we find out now that the white paper had the fingerprints of Collins and Fauci all over it, where the funding, top funding agents are the ones that are, you know, that are involved in helping craft this white paper, denial paper. And then as a wrap up, there's a press conference where all this stuff's going on. The scientists are saying behind the scenes, we were 60 to 80% sure this was a lab leak. And Fauci is making public announcements that this was a natural virus, and made no mention of the fact that almost all of his scientists behind him, mm-hmm. had disclaimed that they believe it was a lab leak.
Yeah.
This is and we have now Fauci, who's our chief expert on how many jabs to get and shutdowns. It's an amazing scandal.
Yeah, it is indeed. And you know, with Fauci, and you know, the thing about it is he does this all with a straight face, which really, and he continues to hold, you got to give him credit for that. I mean, he does keep a straight face, and he continues to stay on his narrative, whatever it might be, no matter what the evidence shows or what the quote unquote science shows. Isn't that the case, people? The science. And by the way, the dollars that Professor Larry Bell's talking about there, we're talking about serious bucks here, friends. We're talking almost about $20 million. You know, there's been a lot of numbers thrown around, but this is, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how history judges all of this. I will tell you that. But surely Fauci's hand is in the cookie jar on this one. Now, there's an interesting, you know, I think Professor Bell gave a really good cliff note example of what's going on. That's why I love this piece he wrote here. That piece, The China Virus Game of Fund and Cover-Up, is available right now on the America Out Loud platform. You can read it right on the front page there. I highly recommend you check that out, and you'll get all the nitty-gritty and the details on that. It really showcases the problem here and who the culprits are. So it's surely worth getting that truth out there, my friends. A big thank you to Professor Larry Bell. And again, one more time, that book looks really, truly exciting that he's got out there with Buzz Aldrin here. And check that out, Beyond Flagpoles and Footprints, Pioneer in the Space Frontier. We have it in the bookstore and on the front page of America Out Loud, my fellow Americans. So check that out there. Let's talk next about the escalating crime in the nation that you're hearing a lot more of. And Sergeant Betsy Smith, spokesman for the National Police Association, joins me on Viewpoint this Sunday. Mayor Eric Adams, he says, and I quote, "It is our city against the killers." He says, "This was not an attack on three brave officers. This is an attack on the city of New York." Is this mayor going to do, before we dive, what do you think about this mayor? Is he going to do anything different in New York? Or are you seeing the same trouble and signs?
Well, he's getting pressure to do things differently. But and yes, he was NYPD, Malcolm, but I don't know that he has the intestinal fortitude to stand up against his party and say enough is enough. He is also burdened with progressive prosecutors who are already saying that they're not going to prosecute crime in the same traditional way. He's also in a city that is has no cash bail. Almost everybody gets right out after the police charge them and bring them in. So he has a lot on his plate. And right now, I can tell you, NYPD having five officers shot in the last 23 days, NYPD is all eyes on Eric Adams.
I mean, five in the last, wow. I didn't even realize that number there. This recent one then with the two shot in Harlem there, what's the crux of this? What's behind this?
Well, it's a domestic dispute. Mother calls on her adult son when the officers show up, two young officers. They show up and they are immediately both shot in the head. One died on the scene. We're waiting to get word on the other. They were shot by a career criminal, Malcolm, who has been in and out of the court system for over a decade. And they were shot with an illegal weapon. Instead of a magazine, it has a drum. So it is a high capacity weapon. Of course, all illegal in New York City, as well as in the state of New York. And that suspect, who was shot by NYPD as well, is also hospitalized. And actually, there is a councilwoman in New York who is mourning his life. And talking about the abolition of NYPD. But she says, in addition to that, she wants to abolish all violence. It's absolute insanity. Yeah.
Well, this is what's happening. They're elevating the criminal intent and they're making them heroes, the criminals and anyone else on the other side of that, and surely including police who are on the front lines. As you say there, a lot of the politicians, very much the Democrat politicians in these cities, are promoting, as you say, no cash bail. They don't want to incarcerate the people. They make them into heroes. And then you've got this problem with the district attorneys. This has become more than just an isolated incident now. It seems to be becoming a strategic plan to destroy our criminal justice system and criminalize all of our cities. This is a big deal right now. Let's talk about this, please.
Well, what we have is increasingly installed by George Soros, district attorneys and state's attorneys throughout the nation. We're talking about L.A., Chicago, Austin, Texas, of course, New York, on and on and on. And so these prosecutors are changing the way that they prosecute crime, and they are favoring the criminals instead of favoring the victims. and the cases that police are bringing. Malcolm, the American law enforcement can arrest every single criminal in the country, but we don't prosecute the cases. So we're going to have a serious grown-up conversation in this country about the entire criminal justice system and stop this nonsense that we keep hearing in the last 20 months and beyond, that our criminal justice system is racist and it's inequitable, et cetera, et cetera. Because here's the thing, and we've got to call out groups like Black Lives Matter, who are causing now, with all of this rhetoric and all of these, the politicization of our justice system, now we've got what? More dead people in this country. And 53% of those, Malcolm, are African Americans, murdered by who? Not the police, primarily by other African Americans. We've got to get serious. We've got to grow up. We've got to be honest, and it's got to stop.
Yeah, and it's troubling when you start phrasing some of this and you have the conversation, as you say, Sergeant Betsy, they call you out and they criminalize you just for having the conversation. You know, you mentioned on that incident in New York, the councilwoman there, again, making the criminal a hero. I want to ask you something that just I was thinking of here as you're talking. You know, anytime I've noticed in our country there's any kind of an incident, right away the political left start talking about gun control. Now, with some of these recent incidents, I've noticed something very peculiar. I don't know if it's just me or if you've noticed or anyone else, but I've noticed when these kinds of incidents happen and it plays to their agenda, they never bring up gun control. I hear nothing about that with this. Like, if that was a different set of circumstances coming out of Harlem, clearly that would have been, the president would have talked about it, everybody would have talked about guns. You don't hear any of that right now. Talk about the psychology behind that, please. Is it me or is this a thing?
It's not just you. And the National Police Association has been talking about this now for many, many months. Oh. What we're seeing is, you know, what we saw during the Trump administration, you and I talked about this, Malcolm, it was this call to get, we got to get rid of guns, you know, extreme gun control, this and that. Now we're not hearing any of the talk about that. And we're not utilizing the gun laws that are already on the books. The only things that we're hearing about is, oh, like, for example, in Chicago, they're getting guns from Indiana. Not true. You know, the white supremacists are flooding our cities with illegal firearms. Not true. We have an epidemic now of gun crime, and yet there is no talk about gun control and utilizing the many, many myriad gun laws that we already have on the books. We just had Joe Biden do a 2-hour press conference, and there was not one question about crime, about guns, about murder, nothing.
Yet, if that was a Republican president or Donald Trump for sure, and the current circumstances were reversed, that would be all they would be talking about, would be what's been happening in the cities. But the problem is, Sergeant Betsy, is that, you know, it's his party who's running the cities, and he's aware of that. Joe Biden and his team is. I talk about Biden, but it really is the administration who seems to be running things more or less. And they seem to, that's what I'm saying. There's this, it's a strange phenomenon right now, what's happening. And the question is, are people going to tolerate this? Are they going to put up with it? Because right now you have a shortage of police, which I know you can talk about. There's a crisis. And we've been seeing this build for some time now of recruiting. We knew that was going to happen. And retention of police officers, who would want the job? I mean, they're retiring in droves here because, my golly, it surely doesn't pay that kind of money that you're going to risk your life for these lunatics. They've become really the target here of a society that is completely out of control. And this genie's well out of the bottle here. You can talk about DAs and Soros and all of that all day long, but there's a lot of damage here. How do we damage control? But I mean, this is going to be a Herculean event to get this thing back put together. Is it not?
Well, it is, but we've done this before, Malcolm. We did this in the 60s. We did this in the 90s, where we were able to take extraordinary crime spikes, lack of police, et cetera. And we were able to rein all of that in. We can do it again. The problem is we have right now a media and a political party in charge who do nothing but disrespect, vilify, and lie about American law enforcement. And that media also hides the facts from the American people and the Joe Biden administration, as his team said yesterday. Well, we can't, you know, most crime is local, and we can't expect the president to know about these individual cases, even though they're getting these individual, as you will, cases of crime are getting national and international attention. And yet they're saying, well, he can't know about this. If you recall, they asked Trump about every little case that was happening that involved law enforcement or involved the racialization of crime. But now Biden's, and this is something he does that's always convenient, where he'll say, well, you know what? That's a local issue. I'm not going to get involved in that. One of the things the federal government could do, if these Soros-installed DAs and state's attorneys are not going to prosecute cases, the federal government can come in. Any of these cases can be charged and prosecuted federally and go before federal judges. I'd like to see the Biden administration do that.
Interesting point. So you're saying they have the control to be able to handle the problem if they really wanted to.
They absolutely do. And this is something that, for example, in my native Chicago, that we have done over the years, is bring in federal law enforcement to help the locals and also prosecute these cases federally. And so if you're able to do it, there's also, and we're doing some research on this now, in certain states, governors have some power to go into these counties where we have these extreme far left prosecutors who don't want to do anything. And in some states, the governors can take control to prosecute these cases. Because again, right now we've got a war on cops, but we also have a war on our citizens. And then we go further, Malcolm, and talk about what's happening at the border, because that factors all into this huge crime issue as well.
We are becoming, definitely are a country of red states and blue states. And, you know, I'm thinking here as you're saying that, Sergeant Betsy, that the problem with, and you, as you say, the feds, and they can get involved in some of these things. Okay. But then again, we typically cry on the other side of that debate and argument, federal overreach. And we're seeing that consistently. But of course, the states and more so the counties and more so the cities and the towns are not doing their job. It's a trickle effect all the way through the system here. Isn't it ironic that this is the one time you almost would like to see the federal government step in for the right reasons? Yet you really can't trust the federal government to do the right thing anyways, as we're seeing with the politicizing of all those branches and bureaucracy of all of it, the FBI, CIA, NSA, DHS, all of them. So it's really, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, Sergeant Betsy.
And that's absolutely true. The crime crisis in America is now an all hands on deck situation where we have to use the resources of the federal government, as well as state, local, and county. We also need the American public to stand up and say, I don't want this crime in my neighborhood. Yeah. I want more police officers. I support my law enforcement. And they need to get loud in speaking with their state, local politicians. And they need to also push back, as do police leaders, on the American mainstream media and say, look, you have got to start telling the truth. And the president needs to be asked hard questions. Mayors and governors need to be asked hard questions, as do police chiefs and sheriffs. It's all hands on deck, Malcolm. This is beyond a crisis. We are literally in a war on the streets of some of our biggest cities in this country, and it's trickling down into more rural and suburban areas.
Yeah, it surely is. Sergeant Betsy Smith, again, spokesman for the National Police Association, she puts it out there perfectly. I mean, listen to her summary points there, my fellow Americans. In fact, as this goes to podcast, rewind it and listen again to what she says there. Her summary there to wrap it up is very accurate, very heartfelt, but it really is the game plan for what needs to happen here, I believe. You know, it's the breakdown of society is what we're talking about here. And, you know, when crime hits your own personal life within your loved ones itself, it becomes a whole different story, doesn't it? Now it's no longer on the television set. It's now impacting your life. So this rallying call is for everybody to do exactly what Sergeant Betsy Smith says there. And it is time. We're going to have to do that. It is a Herculean order. There's no doubt about it, but it's one that has to be done. A tremendous thank you to our dear friend, Sergeant Betsy Smith here. Now, a lot more happening just ahead here. We're going to have Dr. Peter Bregan on here talking about China and the global predator. And of course, he's a best-selling author and all what he's got to say. And then a little bit later, Russia and Ukraine as well. The former CIA Del Wilbur will be here and going to touch into that story as well here. It's all back at AmericaOutloud.com, my friends. Check it out there and help us get the out loud truth from sea to shining sea. Or at least we need to make those seas shine again if they're not currently here. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
In 2008, the amount of concentrated time people could spend on a task without becoming distracted was 12 seconds. 5 years later, it was only 8 seconds, 1 second less than a goldfish. If you find yourself always distracted or having trouble recalling information, you're likely to fall behind in the demanding, fast-paced 21st century. In other words, brain performance is more critical now than ever. Boost your brain power with Healthy Cells Focus Plus Recall. Science-backed nootropics to sharpen focus, concentrate longer, enhance recall, improve mental speed, learn rapidly, and be more alert. It's a pill-free brain supplement made with maximum absorption technology, designed to feed our brains at the cellular level. Take it for a test drive. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of Focus Plus Recall. That's HealthyCell.com. Code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
As Americans, we seek to form a more perfect union. To paraphrase Abraham Lincoln, we are a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And God willing, we shall not perish from the earth. AmericaOutloud.com. Liberty and justice for all. Welcome back to Viewpoint This Sunday. It is Malcolm Out Loud here, yours truly. And thank you, my fellow Americans, for being with us on the mission here. It is liberty and justice for all, no doubt about it. That was our mission. That was our mantra. It was 5 years ago, last April, and it still remains that today as we continue on in the fight for liberty for all. Now, it's all back at America Out Loud. You know, I want to tell you, we have the most awesome people that are part of this network, our experts. It really is the joy of a lifetime to be able to work with such incredible people and talent. And that's really is what it all about. And, you know, everybody's on a mission. Just about everybody is a patriot in one form or another, and they're on a mission, really, to make our country and our lives better for all. And so, listen, I encourage you to get over there, help us share the good word, and help us get it out there as we push against evil in the fight of good and evil, as I always say to you on the weekday program there. Now, let's continue on here with Viewpoint. And I've got up next here, Dr. Peter Bregan joins me. What an honor to have him on. He is the author of, surely you've heard Dr. McCullough talk about this a lot, this explosive book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are Their Prey. And that link to the book is on the front page, actually, of America Out Loud. You can get it in the bookstore, or get it on any bookstore for that matter. But just get it and read through. And the thing about this is the research that Dr. Peter Bregan, and I got to give credit to his wife, Ginger Bregan, as well, that they've done in this, is surely second to none. Now, looking at the current plight of what we're dealing with right now with China, who's at the center of this storm of the coronavirus COVID-19 exercise we've been through now for over a couple of years now. Dr. Breggin here, I want to just touch with you here. You know, there's a lot of talk about gain of function in China's labs. In fact, I talk all the time to Dr. Li Mengyang about this. You know, I've always asked her, like, what's going on in their labs? What are they up to really in all of this? And talking about bioweapons again, you know, gain of function is very controversial. It's not something we should be playing with. We're playing with things we have no business playing with. And these, as these viruses get out in the wild, right now, China is having, which is not being reported on very much at all, some real episodic moments of locking people into homes and businesses. And I mean, this is real stuff that's happening here. The hemorrhagic fever and the Nipah virus are really tearing the country apart. There's other things happening there that are very concerning, just like when we were talking about COVID before it hit. What do you think? Tell us more what you know about these bio labs, the danger of this, gain of function, and what you see, Dr. Breggin.
Well, gain of function, I like to call gain of lethal function, so it's not a euphemism. It's research aimed at increasing the dangerousness of viruses, their virility, their ability to transmit, and the severity of the symptoms. We got involved in this whole program of taking on COVID-19 when we found out that Anthony Fauci at NIAID, National Institutes for Allergy and Infectious Disease, Fauci has been funding well before 2015 SARS-CoV gain-of-function research with the two top Chinese researchers at the Wuhan lab, including the infamous Batwoman, who is sort of viewed as some sort of celebrity in the Western media. So he was obviously lying to Congress. They have been paying for this kind of research for 10 or 15 years in the United States, and for at least since around 2012 or 13 with China. So in effect, Fauci's a traitor who has been funding military biological warfare research for the Chinese, with them and for them, paying for individual Chinese researchers, paying for collaborative research, paying for the Wuhan Institute research. And in doing so, he has to know, because he is a very, very experienced man, we all know, that in China, nothing is separate from the military and from the Chinese Communist Party. In fact, very few people talk about this. Since January of 2020, the head of the Wuhan lab has been a woman who is their China's top biological warfare expert. So literally, we have been giving China, who hates us, who is committing unrestricted warfare in their own terms and stealth warfare in their own terms against us for decades, and he's been supporting them. And that's the price of globalism, where you don't believe in America, you don't believe in God, you don't believe in patriotism, you believe in a kind of unrestricted exploitation of humanity. That's where Fauci is. He's not the kingpin. He's like the mafia representative in the U.S. He's, I think, our top mafia. But it really goes back to many other people, far more powerful. Fauci, by the way, had been working with Bill Gates since at least 2010. The media just lies about this, when they announced the decade of the vaccine. That was announced with Klaus Schwab. That was announced with Bill Gates at the Schwab's famous Davos conferences. They were working with Wellcome Trust, which has been perpetually involved with Fauci and with NIH, glossing over the origins of the virus in China. So, Malcolm, we're looking at a very long-term unholy collaboration. As for what's happening in China right now, I think it's really obscure. The Chinese now, I was just talking with her mutual friend, Li Mingyan, Dr. Yan, about that their secrecy is vastly increased since the Wuhan lab. They're being more and more cautious. They see themselves increasingly possibly, you know, coming into some severe conflict with the U.S. Yeah. We really have to accept they've been at war with us for a long time.
Yeah, they've become more brazen, I guess is the word I'd use, Dr. Bregan. And, you know, in many ways, I look at this, what I reference always as a COVID exercise over the last couple of years. What worries me really, truly is this. I'm concerned that this was a test of the CCP. And it really is. That's what I would call it. You know, remember, you always talk about the emergency broadcast system. This is only a test, right? Well, I kind of look at this COVID thing as sort of that sort of thing from the Communist Party. This is only a test. What worries me now, really, and that's why I've been bringing this up consistently with Dr. Li Mingyang and others, as I do you here, it's very concerning. They've seen the way the world reacts to this. They've seen the way our country reacts to this. They've seen the results they've got. I mean, they're the only ones in the world where their GDP went up. Everybody else went down.
That's right.
I mean, this test, we have failed it, but they have surely got the rewards of this. Are you concerned? I mean, listen, it was 100 years since the last 1917, 18, 19, since the last pandemic. Here we are here in 2022. We've been dealing with this since 2020 and almost 2019 when it came out of China. Do you see this as becoming more of a routine? I mean, is this going to become normal now or does this go away and we're done with it for at least the next 100 years?
Well, there's no doubt whatsoever that neither China nor the global billionaires or the big tech companies or the big banks or the UN or the World Health Organization, which is a part of the alignment of the what we call the global predators, there's no doubt that they're in this for victory. And they see the United States of America, you know, a proud America, a strong America, an America that believes in itself, that has an America first and expects other countries to put themselves first. They see us as the only real impediment to taking over the world. There's no question about it. We document that so clearly in COVID-19 and the global predators. And I think that the globalists other than China who think they're going to come out on top eventually are wrong. Once they weaken us, once Bill Gates and Mike Bloomberg, Klaus Schwab, and even the UN, once they all weaken the U.S. enough that China becomes what they want, the dominant market, the great source of money, the great source of power, China will just eat them alive. So what we're really looking at, and people aren't talking about this, Malcolm, what we're really looking at is a 1,000-year Chinese communist empire. That is where they're going. There's going to be no let up. Whether they use viruses to attack us or bacterium or whether they just try to collapse our economy, which they've always been trying to do, or whether they destroy our democracy, as is happening now. They're in this for the long haul. The spike protein is merely the weapon of the moment against Western democracy.
Wow. Wow, that is a quotable quote right there. The spike protein being just the weapon of the moment, Dr. Bregan. That tells you right there what's going on with this China effect. You know, they do play the long-term game much, much better than we do here in America. Our politicians only play the election game to get to the next election, whereas countries like China, they play, as you say, hundreds and thousands of years ahead. We're in this sort of a global shift happening right now, it seems, which is why your book is so relevant right now to what's happening, because it spotlights a lot of these problems. And this global shift that's happening is setting up for the next move that's happening. And, I think a lot of people are in denial right now, I would suggest to you, Dr. Bregan, because it's happening in our lifetimes. You know, sometimes you can't put your finger on it when you look historically at things. And you know what I mean? And yet it's happening right now while we're living and breathing, which is kind of an exciting time to be alive. But it's also a very stressful time, isn't it?
Yeah, Americans, this is a time for you to be as proud and strong as the founders of America.
Amen.
Now, I like to call our movement Refounding America. That's what I call my TV show, Refounding America and Reclaiming Ourselves. We need to find our own personal strength. our belief in freedom, in personal responsibility, in you know, being grateful to God and becoming a source of love. Those are my four basic principles.
Well, those are the things I talk about every day on America Out Loud. Listen, I want to get your opinion. I want to ask you about the Olympics. I just thought of that just now. You know, I mentioned I started this talking to you about the hemorrhagic fever and the deadly Nipah virus. I mean, these things have are very lethal. They're happening in China now. This whole aspect of, well, the administration, the Biden administration did a diplomatic boycott, which who really cares? China doesn't want the diplomats there anyways. But what we're really talking about here is the athletes. What is the danger of athletes bringing some of this back here? And why? What would it take? Because they don't look like they're doing any sort of a boycott for that. Should we be sending our athletes to China at this time?
Well, let me tell you this. There have already been at least four SARS-CoV leaks from Chinese labs over the years since 2002, 2003. It's actually 2003, 2004. So we know that this is an unsafe place in those terms. But the other part of it is they're at war with us. This isn't even like canceling, which I was against, canceling the Olympics way back with Russia, which I thought was just unfair to the athletes. The athletes are at risk. And according to Li Mingyan, you know, they're being put through level 3 restrictions. They're not going to have any contact with the Chinese citizens. Any citizens in contact with them are going to have weeks and weeks of isolation afterward. So we know the Chinese are worried about this. But on the other hand, you don't know what Xi Jinping's going to do. He might purposely infect Americans. That's what he did originally. You know, he sent airplanes over here loaded with people with the SARS-CoV-2 while WHO was covering up for him and Fauci was covering up for him. It's just too volatile. It's too unpredictable. We're dealing with a country that does not have our ethics, that is a huge threat to us. I think we're endangering our athletes. And the danger is also that they'll bring stuff back on us, which they would love, Xi Jinping would love.
Absolutely, absolutely. Dr. Peter Breggin, thank you for joining us on Viewpoint this Sunday, Dr. Breggin.
Thank you, Malcolm. I just love working with you. You're doing great, great, great work.
Amen to that. Thank you, sir. And, you know, you hear Dr. Breggin, I could talk to him for hours very clearly. Now, the book, I want to remind you, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are Their Prey. Look that up again. You'll find it on the front page of AmericaOutloud.com. Also in the bookstore, the America Out Loud bookstore, or any bookstore for that matter. Well, let's make a move now from China over to Russia and see what's happening in Russia. And you've been hearing all the stories about Ukraine, what's taking place there. There's a lot more to this story, of course, as well here. Joining me on the program for this is Del Wilmer is here. Del is a former CIA and Department of Defense Intelligence and Counterterrorism Officer. Del served overseas in Eastern and Western Europe and the Middle East. His op-ed on America Out Loud is a definite must read. Why Ukraine Matters to America. If you thought it didn't, you want to read that and you'll get historical context of things as well. Now, Dale, Vladimir Putin comes out and he says, we have no plans to invade. And of course, that was the message from Putin, but it was the message delivered by the Russian foreign minister after the talks they just had with Blinken. Had to think about who we have now in that spot, but it is Blinken indeed. And this was in regards to the troop buildup there on the border there, his counterpart in Russia, naturally. You know, they've said this every time. It's like they shake their head yes, but yet it's always no, or they shake their head no, and it's always yes. You can't obviously believe them. Why would they have all those troops amassed there? And also, they've sent them on the other border as well. You feel like they're getting ready to invade? Do you have any different thought on that? Or
I'm not sure. First of all, thanks for having me. But, you know, Vladimir Putin is a little bit difficult to really nail down because, you know, he's so duplicitous, I guess, is the right word. He says one thing and does another. And, you know, I go back to when George Bush W was the president. And, you know, he had a meeting with Putin, and, and said that he saw into his soul or whatever. And at that time, I thought, you know, geez, what planet is this guy on? Because there's no way to really understand Putin unless you look at him for what he is or what he believes he is anyway. And that is, as I mentioned in my article, he views himself as a Russian patriot. And Putin was severely stung by the collapse of the Soviet Union. Not so much the collapse of communism, but because of the gloating. He viewed it as gloating that was taking place by everybody in the West about how, you know, you had George H.W. Bush and other politicians that were all commenting about how we defeated Soviet communism without firing a shot. And I mean, he took that personal, and he still takes that personal. And I think his goal is to basically rub our noses in it, to turn the tables on us and make us squirm for a while. So I'm not really sure whether his intention is to cross the border, but he's certainly going to play this for everything that he can. It's almost like this is a remake of the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1961 with the roles reversed, you know. Yeah. And, you know, we certainly didn't want offensive missile capabilities in Cuba. And, you know, if you're looking at it from his perspective, I can kind of understand his position a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. That is the sticking point right there, making Ukraine part of NATO, bringing the West into their neighborhood, which they clearly don't want, as you say there. You know, it's interesting. Your analysis, I find actually different and refreshing than most of them out there, because about everybody you hear right now is thinking that an invasion is imminent, and it may or may not happen. As you say, you're not saying it is or isn't. That's interesting, because when you look at the foreign minister, I remember looking at his body language leaving the meeting with Blinken, a Lavrov I'm talking about there, you know, and I remember looking at his body language, and it was sort of that schmuck on his face, that grin. It's sort of a Vladimir Putin play, in other words. I would guess, to playing off what you just said, they are probably enjoying this moment to the nth degree, thinking the way they've got the West all in a tizzy. And even if they plan to do nothing, it's sort of a chess game they're having a little fun with, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, I think, you know, as I mentioned, you know, Putin was very, very, you know, stung by what happened with the collapse of the Soviets. And and as I said, this is all personal, you know, for him. This is not necessarily political, but it's personal. He's getting evens for what he believes were the slights and insults that were levied upon the Soviet, or upon Mother Russia, you know, after the collapse of the Soviet Union. And so he's going to play this for everything it's worth. And now he may decide that he may get bold enough to decide that, you know, he can make an incursion into Ukraine. Mm-hmm. But you know, but that remains to be seen. It all depends on how solid the NATO alliance is. And I'm not convinced that the NATO alliance is solid enough to really do anything should Putin decide to cross the border.
Yeah, well, they've already taken the gem there, the Crimean Peninsula, of course, under the Barack Obama regime. That has already taken place, and now we're dealing with other parts of the Ukraine. You know, let me do this here. The perspective of Russia, speak about now the Russian and American relationship I want to touch on with you here. You know, I'm just going to say this to you, and I want listeners to understand, I believe we blew it here. I believe I'm speaking about America, the United States here, right here at home. I believe we blew the whole thing. We've made a catastrophe out of the Russian-American relationship. It's become a bit of a joke here. Now, had we played our cards right, knowing the aggression of China, knowing that China has always been the real threat, you know, throughout the Trump years, they used Russia as a pincushion and really made it into a laughing stock all over the place. Back to what you said moments ago, that Putin may be trying to, you know, give a dose of the own medicine back. It is remarkable with all that. You know, My sense is, Dell, and you know better as a military guy and a former CIA guy, but I think we should have kept Russia. I've felt this for years, by the way, and I've said this more than once on national radio, so I'll say it again here. I believe we should have kept Russia closer by our side. I think we have more in common with Russia, really, truly, than we do with China or any Middle East country for that matter. And I think we blew it here because we've created an adversary and an enemy for something that could have been a little different, as we did in previous historical times. I think we didn't really look at this thing long-term gain. We played short-term gain. The politicians did, I would say. What do you say about that analysis I give you back, that we'd have been far better off having them closer than pushing them away?
Oh, you're absolutely spot on. That is exactly what I was saying, you know, a couple of dozen years ago when the Soviet Union fell. And as I said, when all of the, you know, the braggadocio and the gloating was going on, I was saying back then to anybody that would listen, I was telling them, hey, we need to back off. We need to tone things down a little bit. This is an opportunity that we have to build a relationship with Russia. We should have been extending every hand that we could and every opportunity take advantage of to try to guide them and help them develop their economy, help them, you know, change from the totalitarian state that they were in. And we didn't do it. We just sat back and we gloated, you know, and we rubbed their noses in it, basically. And we're paying that the cost of that now.
Do you think there's any hope for, right now we've got what we've got in the White House with the Biden administration, like it or leave it, they're in power for the next 3 years. Hard to imagine. All the damage that's been done in our nation, Dell, has only been done inside of a year now. And we've completely changed the entire paradigm here that's changed in just 1 year. Is remarkable that it seems like we've been in here 30 years with the Biden administration. It's only been a year. You know, is there any way in the short game? I would imagine there's not any way to change this relationship. What could be done with this? And I guess a lot of it probably depends upon what Russia does with Ukraine next, maybe.
Well, if things continue as they are with Biden, as president, and with the team that he's surrounded himself with, which are all mostly Obama retreads. And we know that Putin had no respect for Obama whatsoever. But I'm afraid that in 3 more years, the world is going to look a whole lot different than it does right now. And not in a good way. Our adversaries are going to, they recognize that this administration is weak, that Biden is incompetent, mentally incompetent, probably, and they're going to take advantage of it. Hell, we'd be doing the same thing. We'd be taking advantage of it, you know. So we've got our work cut out for us. And the thing that people seem to forget is Trump had a very good handle on Vladimir Putin, you know. And of course, Trump was having to deal with all of this Russian collusion baloney that was being thrown out. But Trump clearly said, you know, I'd rather be friends with Russia than enemies. And he was right. You know, we had an opportunity with Trump to, you know, and Trump was certainly mindful of who Vladimir Putin was and what he was. But he also saw the reality of this situation, that we were better off having better relations and a better relationship with Russia than to be enemies with them. And, you know, we've lost that opportunity that you mentioned, that now Russia is being actually driven towards a closer relationship with the communist Chinese regime. And that does not bode well for America or the West.
Yep, no, that's exactly it. Now you've got two enemies, because China and Russia do not like each other. But they are certainly going to play together to toy with the West. And so now you've got a recipe for more drama on the high seas, my fellow Americans. Sadly, this is really the result, the cause and effect of the political buffoons, I sadly say to you, I have no joy in that in Washington, and no forethought put into what's happening here in our nation. You've learned a great deal today. We've covered some ground here for sure, my fellow Americans. Now, the important thing is to get this shared out there around the world. This is the fastest growing news magazine in the nation. There's no doubt about that. Viewpoint is tremendous. And it's because of the voices you're just hearing right here, right now. A big thank you here to former CIA Del Wilber, tremendous. Dr. Peter Bregan and his bestseller and what he's exposed with China is second to none. That book, again, is on the front page in the American Out Loud bookstore. Sergeant Betsy Smith, National Police Association, the escalating crime in our nation. And Professor Larry Bell on the Biden speech filibuster. Big thank you to all. Now, friends, it's all back there. Liberty and justice for all at America Out Loud. Thank you for being with me on the mission here. It's time to get involved and get loud.